Hello, this is the Health Technology Podcast. My name is Christine Winotto. I'm the director of the Rosemont Institute at UCSF. Today, we are talking to Eric Stone and Peter Defgon, founders of Velano Vasculars. Velano's needle-free device allows nurses and doctors to get blood from an existing IV line without needing to do a new jab. If you're a healthy patient who doesn't see the inside of hospital much, getting your blood drawn may not seem like a big deal. Sure, nobody likes needle, but can you really complain about a little jab now and then? However, if you're a chronic patient who checks into hospital all the time for stays of 5 to 7 days, every day, 2 or 3 times a day, you will need to get your blood drawn. That adds up to a lot of needle sticks. Let's hear from Eric and Pitu how they met and what their vision for Velano is. Enjoy the talk. Welcome. Today we have Eric Stone and Pitu Defgon from Velano Vascular. Eric and Pitu are co-founders. Thank you for joining me today. So I thought it would be good to hear about your background and how you two meet and how you decide to start this company together.
So my brief background is I started my career off as a dot-com entrepreneur, actually, a recovering dot-com entrepreneur in the 1990s due to my college career. But I was always a track to go into medical school, into medicine. I always wanted to go on the innovation side of healthcare. After medical school and a residency at the University of Pennsylvania, which brought me to Philadelphia, I had a chance to take a little bit of a left turn and look at device innovation. Got an MBA there at Wharton, and then afterwards was an investor in the device space for a couple of years. Then Eric and I met. Basically, lots of mutual connections, friends, colleagues were saying that I should meet this guy. Mm-hmm. And I had an idea to create a device that would ideally help patients have a better experience in hospitals. So we met on one night over a drink, and it's been about, 6, 7 years since then.
And what's your background?
So most germane to my career is my personal experience. I was diagnosed over 25 years ago with Crohn's disease. And since that experience as a teenager of learning that I would live the rest of my life with a chronic illness, I've been involved in healthcare as a patient advocate and currently as a national trustee of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. And in a very nonlinear career trajectory from working in software and software and life sciences with a venture-backed company to personalized medicine and leading a commercial organization for a company helping oncologists prioritize targeted therapies, to serving as a consultant advising on marketing strategy and organizational change efforts with companies in healthcare and for-profit and nonprofit sectors, to years after graduate school with Abbott Laboratories in their interventional cardiology business in the U.S. and living in Europe. And all along the way, have been involved as an investor and board member and advisor in a host of different medical innovation companies and healthcare software and healthcare devices. It really was meeting Pitu now about 6.5 years ago through an introduction of a number of mutual colleagues and friends when I was looking to start a company and bring a technology to market that I recognized that I'd found my personal and professional calling as a needle phobic patient, a trypanophobe, meeting a physician and serial entrepreneur who had an absolutely brilliant idea for removing the needle from the most common invasive procedure we do every day in a hospital. To me, it was apparent that this was going to be a journey that was going to be both fun and fulfilling.
So, Pitu, do you have a medical degree as well?
Yeah, I'm actually a practicing ICU hospitalist. I still do a few shifts once in a while now, kind of far and few between. But I've always tried to keep one foot on the clinical side to understand the unmet needs in healthcare. And so came up with a list of about 30 things that bothered me as I was going through my training. Deficiencies, shortcomings, things that patients hate, things that providers hate. Mm-hmm. You know, and pretty high on my list was blood draws, and the technology we invented was directly related to trying to fix that issue. And I found it really a kindred spirit in a change agent in Eric when we got together.
Mm-hmm. So this is both of your first company that you started, or no? Mm-hmm. So, but prior you had something that is not.
Yeah, no. But part of my medical career, I caught the entrepreneurial bug back in the '90s with a dot-com startup company. Okay. It was the first textbook swapping company in the U.S. Okay. Between 96 and 2000, I rode the bubble up and rode the bubble down. Uh-huh. Amazing experience, especially at that stage of my life and times. I had no idea the impact of being on the entrepreneurial side early would come back after all those years of clinical training later. Uh-huh. But that's what really set the arc in my career.
And in your case?
So for the most part, I've been entrepreneurial. So I started the life sciences division for Dow, a publicly traded software company, working with the large medical device companies, and served as a, I guess, tried and true entrepreneur and built a consulting business with a few different folks who worked with me between two different graduate degrees, mm-hmm. early to mid-2000s. And then I've also been an investor and board member for mm-hmm. a number of early stage startup and early growth companies. Mm-hmm. In terms of the experience of starting something from scratch and running it, definitely my first rodeo with respect to that. But sitting in different vantage points over the last 20 years or so, the playbook is pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So tell us, what is the technology that Velan Vascular developed?
So we have a series of technologies, a few of which now are commercially available, and a rather robust pipeline based on many of the unmet needs that Pito identified in his practice and subsequently as entrepreneurs developing devices. The first of which sits at the intersection of three very critical clinical domains: blood collection, vascular access, and infection prevention. Specifically, as we mentioned, the most common invasive procedure we do in a hospital around the world every day is the act of drawing blood. 70% of clinical decisions are informed by the results of that blood draw. And going back to P2's very initial idea and invention, the way that it's done today is suboptimal for everybody. It's suboptimal for patients. It's suboptimal for practitioners.
How is it done today?
It's suboptimal for hospitals. So a host of different ways. It's a fragmented approach to drawing blood. We stick patients with needles at 2 and 3 a.m. so our physicians have their results when they round before going into clinic and surgery, where we wake them up and we disrupt sleep, which disrupts healing. We draw off of what is called lines, so central lines, PICC lines, midlines. We'll try to draw blood off of short peripheral IV catheters that are placed to infuse fluid into the body and ineffective over time for drawing blood out of the body. So there's a significant amount of variability also with respect to who is doing the procedure, whether it be a medical resident, a nurse, a phlebotomist, a technician. So the aim of our technology, PIVO, is to remove that variability and to standardize. To standardize with the aims of enhancing the patient experience, enhancing practitioner safety and practitioner efficiency, and with the aim of helping hospitals to be more effective in delivering better care in a more cost-effective manner.
Mm-hmm. How does your product do that?
Sure. So PIVO is a single-use device that you would connect to in a standard IV line. You deploy a small catheter through the IV system. It solves some of the mechanical issues. I won't go all into them today, but mm-hmm. it solves some of the mechanical and physiologic issues that prevent them from being great at drawing blood today. You draw your regular samples. The back of the device is universally compatible with the regular tubes and syringes that are on the market today. And then you draw your samples, you retract the device, you detach it, and throw it away. So very similar workflow, but a completely different experience for the provider and the patient that are using it.
So you're taking advantage of the line that's already connected to
Correct.
The patients.
Maybe what would make more sense is, let me give you a sense of what goes on today. So the average patient who shows up on the adult side, so an average adult patient, is typically admitted for 4 or 5 days. So think of 60, 70, 80-year-old person, going to get 2 to 3 lab tests every day for the entire time that they're there. And most of the time, the lab tests they get those through a needle. So you start to have little black and blue spots starting in their hands, their forearm, maybe in their elbow region there. A lot of them are anticoagulated, and a lot of them are very hard to stick, meaning that they've got, if they're older, they're obese, there's lots of risk factors for being what I would call a tough stick patient. We also call them divas. Don't tell the patients that, but so difficult venous access is the acronym that a lot of people will use. And so if you start to add it up, you get a peripheral IV inserted when you get to the ER or the OR, then you're going to get stuck somewhere between every 6, 8, 12 hours for lab testing to guide your care. You may start off as being relatively easy to access, right? You have a nice plump vein somewhere in your hand, but then you use those a few times, you get a nice bruise, you have to go to another spot. So it becomes harder and harder to get blood out of a diva. And by the 4th or 5th day, you can have multiple failed attempts, escalations to other more expensive and risky devices, other providers have to be brought in, ultrasound has to be brought in. So it can become a real complicated situation. At the end of the day, we're just trying to get lab tests and get information, right, for your care. But it becomes a real hurdle and a hassle for the providers and the hospitals to do it.
Mm, okay. You mentioned that it's currently available in the market. It's commercial. Where have you placed your product right now?
We've done a significant amount of work, clinical, operational effectiveness in nature and otherwise, at health systems like Intermountain Healthcare, Sutter here in California, Griffin Hospital, University Hospitals in Cleveland. There will be a whole host of additional hospitals that will be announced shortly, mm-hmm. coming to a hospital near you. The demand for the technology and the procedure has been quite significant. Early on, there was a whole host of skepticism, clinical, technical, financial, and otherwise. And like any change management initiative, and like any initiative or innovation, I should say, mm-hmm. in healthcare, it requires a groundswell. And there are those organizations that are willing and comfortable to be uncomfortable and to be first. We've embraced that opportunity. We've identified those brave souls. And now we're bringing the technology and the procedure to many, many more institutions.
What was their clinical skepticism about this? I mean, it seems to make sense.
Right. From day one, a whole host of items, beginning with there isn't a problem to solve. So if we sit down with a CEO, a CNO, a chief medical officer, a head of infection prevention, whoever it may be, it's pretty consistently been an overlooked and underappreciated procedure from the perspective of its ubiquity, from the perspective of the economics and the cost, financial and otherwise, associated with it. So as an example, early on, we started in partnering with hospitals by accessing their data. How many blood draws did you do in a given calendar year in the inpatient setting? Starting with the inpatient setting, because you have to have an IV catheter or IV line indwelling already for our technology to work. Of those, what percent were between the hours of 2 a.m. and 7 a.m.? What percent of your patients had 2 blood draws in a day, 3 blood draws in a day? What are the economics associated with the difficult venous access patients that P2 referenced that are 1 in 3 because they're chronically ill, they're diabetic, they're obese, whatever it might be? And we presented those data back to the senior level leadership of a number of hospitals that we did some early work with. And it was only then that the individuals in those administrative functions recognized we actually have a problem that needs to be solved. If you're relatively healthy or you're removed from the bedside, then your approach to a blood draw is I go in once a year for my cholesterol check. I get stuck with a needle. It's not fun. It's not the perspective of someone like myself who's a chronic patient who has serial hospitalizations, who has been in the hospital for 10 days, and they may not be a diva when they enter the hospital, but they certainly are by day 5 or day 7. Even irrespective of the technologies that we develop, we are bringing to market solutions to challenges and problems, not just plastic. We say internally, what we're doing is about people, not about plastic. So if we can help a hospital recognize that their IV catheter placement and maintenance protocols are either suboptimal or they're not being adhered to, or we can help them recognize that they're in effect desanguinating their patients because 18% of patients have 3 or more blood draws in a given day. And are they coordinating care across their specialists, and do they need that number of labs on a patient? That is where we were able to debunk some of the myths that this isn't a problem. And to your question about the clinical challenges, well, if you have a hemolyzed sample, which is red blood cell shearing or tearing from pulling off of an IV catheter, can we draw blood through a smaller catheter that goes through the IV catheter, through our PIVO device that has hemolysis rates at parity to blood drawn out of a needle? Well, we've subsequently proven, and I should say our customers have proven of their own accord, that we can reduce hemolysis rates relative to standards of care. And so there's been a series of questions that have been asked around the integrity of the IV catheter, if it's being repeatedly accessed by a device like ours, the integrity of the sample and the sample quality from analyte results to hemolysis rates, that through a series of very methodical clinical studies at partner hospitals like University Hospitals in Cleveland and the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia and Brigham and Women's Hospital, part of the Harvard Partner System in Boston, where they have conducted research and published results that have debunked many of the myths behind why what we're doing can be done and should be done.
This podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy. transforming your technologies into unique healthcare solutions. For more information, you can visit their website at www.iolifescience.com.
I can just add for a second too, I think there was a lot of folklore on the clinical side. And I think like probably many entrepreneurs face this in whatever industry you're in, right? That there's certain truths that people think, well, are true and they may not be. And one of the neat things about this was this procedure touches everybody, like Eric mentioned. I mean, this is done hundreds of millions of times, this procedure every year. Most health systems do about a million times. They're knocking on somebody's door to say, hey, we're here to collect your blood, usually at the miserable times at like 3 or 4 in the morning. But when I started probing in the hospital, why can't we do it better? Why can't we do it off of a peripheral IV? Why do we have to resort to more painful procedures like a venipuncture or using a needle? The answers were really not sufficient. And you could tell they were folklore because people couldn't reference a single study, couldn't reference a journal article that was published in the last 30 years. And so that's exactly where you can see opportunity, right? Where people, there's truths that they hold self-evident, but they're not. And so once we started to pull at those strings and actually do the work, and so you know, fortunately, for better or for worse, we had to really invent the science around this and figure some of this stuff out. But that was our charge, right? That's what entrepreneurs do, is figure out the gaps in the knowledge and then build technology to solve it.
You present the data, and that's something that's hard for anybody to deny when you have the data. But obviously, you have to convince them to be in their facility to collect that data. And how do you go about that?
It starts with people, and we say, and I say consistently, that we're in the business of people, not products, and the products are a byproduct of the people. And so through a network of investors and advisors, we've been introduced to exceptional change agents and forward-thinking leaders in hospitals. And for every hospital that we're working with, there's 3 other hospitals that thought the idea was a good one, but we were unable, through a very quick assessment, to find the right kind of champions that were willing to help push a growing boulder uphill with us, which is change management in the healthcare system. So in the earliest days, from the University of Pennsylvania to Brigham and Women's to Intermountain, it very much was a network effect of individuals saying, my counterpart at XYZ Hospital is very progressive, and you should talk to him or you should talk to her. It was a function of researchers saying, I've collaborated in the past with X, Y, or Z individual at A, B, or C hospital. And for us, it was following those leads. Mm-hmm. So we've been very fortunate to have unbelievable partners in the form of hospitals, unbelievable investors from industry and hospitals that have made equity investments in the company, and unbelievable, not just partners, but early customers who are co-creating and co-developing with us. It's been far more art than science. It's been talking to a whole host of people. We had day jobs for 2 years while we went out and talked to hundreds of folks in administration and at the bedside and in research functions, in the lab and in nursing and in operations. And we asked a whole host of questions and received a whole host of responses. To P2's point, some were apparent fact, but very quickly and readily became apparent to us that they were not fact. And having the tenacity to continue to ask the questions, and at the same time, the recognition that we owe a duty to those that helped us early on when they provided us with data and insights to present back to them the so what. And so we've been able to come full circle with all the folks that we worked with early on and bring value back to them now in the form of a commercially available product, but truly a procedure.
I mean, if I can add too, I think, you know, that those early days with any of those potential, their partners at first, hopefully customers down the road, it's about trust. And so when they gave us access to the data with all the right safeguards in place, but then we had to quickly spend a huge amount of our time to prove our argument in their data, right? We had to prove to them that you can trust us with your data and that we care about this issue and we're going to show you back what's going on in your systems. And then once they see that we know what's going on with them and that our solution would actually directly address the issues that are in their current practices, that's when the real magic happened. But that took months. I mean, that's still, you know, took years actually, right, in the early days.
So you mentioned earlier, I think you have experience in change management, and how has that helped you in this? You have to change a lot of people's mind.
So it,
and behavior changes a little bit too. Right?
Well, that's the biggest challenge. It's not where does the funding come from. It's not is this a clinically efficacious product. It's certainly not is this the right thing to do by patients and practitioners. So it starts with a lens to identify who are true change makers, because at the end of the day, they're going to have to drive this through their organization. And identifying who thinks it's a good idea and has the influence internally and has the capability to take idea and drive it to reality. It's further confounded by a recognition that not all institutions are created equal, and some institutions are early adopters and have mechanisms to support early adoption of innovation. So for us, that was looking for hospitals that have an innovation function and an innovation leader that is empowered within. It is tied to institutions that have an chief experience officer or someone who is dedicated to the experience of the patient and also the practitioner, because we know that patient experience impact is heavily informed by the experience of the practitioner in his or her workplace. And so those certainly were a few and continue to be a few endeavors that are important in our checklist of where do we go next. Another aspect that is fundamental is we talk internally about contextualizing the why. It has to come back to people and an investment in people. The products are just an enabler. And so identifying hospitals that are willing to go through the pain of change management, that can show us examples of having gone through it in the recent past. To P2's point, we touch every single patient in the hospital. And so that is a significant endeavor that requires buy-in, not just from nursing, not just from lab, but from finance, from purchasing, from the senior level leadership ranks of the CMO and the CNO and the COO and the CEO. We certainly don't need all of those functions engaged, but we very much need a subset of them engaged. It can't be one individual. It has to be partnership between innovation and or experience and a clinical leader and an operational leader.
And the fact that you are a physician, how's that helped you to make that?
Yes.
Having that insight.
Sure.
And also the people that you know.
Well, I think some of the best innovation in healthcare is all it comes from the folks who are at the bedside, right? Because they know what's actually happening and what the unmet needs are. So I think this is a kind of a logical, obvious example. I think I'm just one of many, you know, a string of many, many folks who've seen an issue in the healthcare system and tried to go fix it. The advantage of being a physician is, of course, that I can talk to other physicians. And so there's some clinical credibility that's always helpful in a company like ours. We're trying to make that change. They have to, again, I go back to trust. The people you are now launching your product to have to trust you. You have to be able to talk their language and understand the culture and the workflow. I'd say workflow has been one of the trickiest things that we've had to either sometimes change or sometimes just fit within with our technology and our training. And so coming from the healthcare system allows us to, you know, allow me to help shape that and understand where the hurdles are going to be. There's some very unique cultures in hospitals, and I say this with a, you know, a big grin and air quotes. Sorry for people who are on listening on the radio, but you know, there's every department has a culture to it. And what's weird is it's consistent across the whole country. So, you know, ERs are very similar to other ERs, mm-hmm. and med-surg floors are very similar, and ICUs are very similar to other ICUs. And so understanding that and how do you fit into that and connect with people and get them to understand your value for their population and for their tasks is one of those key things.
Okay. And I found also when I talked earlier, Eric, is that I found that you have done a great job in gathering like all different stakeholders to become your investors. And I think that's very unique and very special. And can you tell us more about it, and how do you gather
right.
that, or is that
it comes back to people, not products. And the consistent thread throughout all of our investors, whether they be venture capitalists or financial investors, whether they be individuals, whether they be hospitals, is that there is a thread of humanity throughout. I believe every one of our 50 plus investors aims to achieve a financial return on their investment. I also believe that without fail, every single one of them invested because they want to see this become standard of care primarily, and that the secondary aim is financial return. So I could go through a litany of examples where institutional investors, individual investors, hospital investors have personally experienced the dehumanizing effect of being awoken at 4 a.m. or their six-year-old child was awoken at 4 a.m. A nurse or phlebotomist knocked on the door, walked in, and said the following words, "I am sorry. I am here to draw your blood." And those investors have either lived in the shoes of the practitioner who needs to apologize in advance of trying to help that patient, or they've lived in the shoes of the parent, like my parents, who watched their child get stuck repeatedly upon being awoken, or they themselves have experienced that. And so we have been extremely fortunate to have a group of change makers who invest in tech companies, who invest in medical device companies, who have run hospital systems, who have run insurance companies, who have run some of the largest medical device companies from Abbott to Baxter to Johnson & Johnson to Medtronic and on, who have said, we're willing to sign up with our dollars, but more importantly, we're willing to step up with our expertise and our counsel. And so we have leaned on every single one of those individuals, not just financially, but for their expertise and their counsel on our journey. The journey has, every day is different than the prior, and no 2 days are alike. And some of the stories that we have experienced and encountered are you couldn't write a book about them. I guess you could write a book about them, and there would be nothing linear in that book, but it all comes back to the people that have helped shepherd us along. So the hospitals that we've partnered with, even if they haven't made a equity or financial investment in the company, are investing precious, scarce resources in their time, their ability to help us refine the technologies to come up with new technologies. So we have an unbelievable amount of gratitude for the broad, what we call Volano family, because there has been far, far more than $26 million invested in this company. And there's been far more invested than the time and the effort and the passion of the folks who founded it and the people who are building and running the company today. It's a very broad ecosystem. And I think for what we're doing, which is aiming to touch every human being on the planet, because we'll all end up in a hospital at some point in our lives, we'll all need our blood drawn, and this unequivocally will become the standard of care. It takes a village.
Yeah, no, this is great. I'm glad that you're working on it. So when one day I'm in the hospital, they don't have to stick too many needles on me.
This podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into unique healthcare solutions. For more information, you can visit their website at www.iolifescience.com.
So you have your product in a commercial. What's next?
So more Pivo to more people. So identifying our future customers and truly driving towards standard of care. So it's a depth and richness within each hospital where this is used, and it becomes standard of care and it's ubiquitous. And we've already seen that in some of our early adopters and customers. A matter of bringing the technology to other hospitals. And so I'm growing our commercial organization, and we're moving forward from collaboration partners become customers to true customers. And then developing a host of other technologies around the unmet needs that P2 and our team has seen over the years in hospitals. Coming back to that intersection of blood collection and vascular access and infection prevention, there's a lot of opportunity to deliver better, more efficient, more cost-effective care. And we are developing a host of solutions to help do just that.
How big is your team now?
So
helping you developing the next...
So currently we have 25 employees. As I mentioned, the broader Volano family is significantly larger, from consultants to part-time clinical specialists helping us to our investor base, to our collaboration partners. I would argue that we're 150 strong in terms of our reach. Uh-huh. but we're making the investments now to grow clinically and operationally. And then we also have exceptional partners in the form of other companies making complementary technologies, in the form of manufacturing partners and helping us build our products, et cetera.
That's great. So my question is, you know, you both have accomplished a lot before you start Valinovascular. Being entrepreneur is a long journey. Why and how you keep going to ride the ups and downs?
For me, it's about people. It is pushing a boulder uphill, and every day the boulder gets bigger and the hill gets steeper. But I feel like I have the greatest job in the world. It's meeting exceptional people that are aligned behind a mission of helping other people like myself, chronic patients. The stories that I get to see and we get to experience either first or secondhand every week from Malia, who is an 8-year-old who had 6 blood draws in 2.5 hours. And she was stuck once to place an IV catheter, and she was never stuck again for those 6 draws, and slept through 2 of those procedures. I think about myself in the bed as a teenager. I think about my kids and the kind of health care that they're going to receive as they get older, and hopefully not until they're much, much older, and a recognition that there is a better way, and the very ideas that P2 has had and started the development of this technology are premised upon the way we've always done things are not necessarily the way we should continue to do them. So a colleague of ours, who is an innovation leader at a well-respected large health system, says that we need to respectfully upset or kick the status quo. And that's what we're doing. And we're not doing it because we like to be salacious or we like to push a boulder uphill. We're doing it because at some point in our lives, we're all going to be patients. And if we've identified a better way, then it is our charge on this planet to bring that better way to the market and bring it to ubiquity. So this is very much for the patients. It's for the practitioners. If you can remove the needle from the blood draw procedure when you're drawing blood on that difficult venous access patient, if you can reduce the exposure to needle stick injuries if you're drawing blood from an HIV patient or a hepatitis patient, then those are reasons to get up every day and keep pushing that boulder. The people that we work with inspire us. The people that we're serving inspire us. And I think we feel that we have a mission to bring better care to hospitals around the world. We're not going to relent until it becomes a standard of care.
And what about you, Peter?
So for me, I think it's personal impact that keeps me going because the days do seem to get longer and not shorter. And so seeing the fruits of your labor actually out there in the real world, being used by, you know, providers and getting used on patients to improve their lives. So I go back to the original. So the first patient for me that kind of, where the idea kind of came out of was it was an older lady in her mid-80s, and she was had been in the hospital for 5 or 6 days, was really having a bad stay. Her arms were black and blue. They looked like a war zone, basically, from all the sticks she'd had. And she was the one who basically asked that question, that first question, saying, why the heck, she didn't use the word heck, are you still sticking me with needles? And then she pointed to her arm and said, I've got this thing in my arm. You're putting things into my venous system. She didn't say venous system. She said, you know, you're putting stuff into my body through this thing. Why can't you get the blood out? And she even made the connection that when they first put that IV in, that you could actually, it still worked to draw blood for a short period of time. And then the needles started coming, the onslaught of needles. And I mean, she was on the verge of tears after 5 or 6 days of this. And it's too bad. She's lost the history. I don't remember her name. I remember more about her like medical history than I do. I don't remember her name. And so that began my journey to figure out, wow, this does seem really dumb. And it's a miserable experience. And so from that initial encounter to go now, you know, 7, 8 years, whatever it was now, it's been a long time later, to be able to now have a solution for her and for all the folks like her, that is to me the most impactful thing, that I'm trying to make a change in medicine. Look, I trained for you know, 7, 8 years in clinical medicine to help patients. But I think, you know, this is seeing one patient at a time, this is something where I can make a large impact and improve the standard of care. And that keeps me going, right? I mean, how many people get a chance to say that or do that? So that's what I'm very excited about.
That sounds really fun. It looks like you guys really enjoy what you're doing, which is great. So thank you, Eric Stone, and Pete Dudev from Velano Vascular.